Welcome to the IRIS podcast. You are listening to a talk as part of the Data Linkage and Mining Vision, Possibilities and Practicalities Conference organised by the Scottish Universities Insight Institute. This talk was recorded on the 11th of March 2011. Graham Laurie, University of Edinburgh, Good Governance in Data Sharing and Data Linkage for Research and Evaluation Purposes.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Graham Laurie from Edinburgh Law School, trained as a lawyer interested in health law. I've got two other hats that I wear in this context. As Steve's indicated already, in the SHIP project, I'm responsible for the governance arm and also work with colleagues in public engagement. And also in the context of what we actually currently do now in Scotland, we have a Privacy Advisory Committee which advises ISD and which advises GROS, General Register of Scotland, about linkages when there's not consent, etc. And I'm the chair of that committee. And one of the problems that we face with sort of linkages at the moment is that there's a regulatory burden, there's an overburden in terms of all the sorts of approvals that researchers like yourselves might have to go to, and there's also limited scope within which a body like the current PAC can actually operate. It only advises those two entities. There's no such thing as a national entity. So one of the things that we've been trying to do here with SHIP is to think big, to think about this vision, which is Scotland-wide, and as Steve indicated in his talk as well, it's sector-wide as well. So what I would like to share with you this morning are some of our sort of thoughts up until now about what the model might look like in terms of reducing that regulatory burden, but also at the same time making sure that there are adequate protections in place for individuals' privacy and getting that balance right. It's a very tricky balance indeed. So if we try to identify what the objectives are of SHIP, what would the benefits look like if we can actually deliver on this model? This is it in sum here. It's about sort of improved efficiency and transparency and security in terms of the way in which data are actually used and linked, etc., across the country. It's about trying to get more clarity on the governance and processes that are required in order to make appropriate linkages and also to reduce that burden that's involved. And as Steve's indicated, it's about improving data security, for example, through that safe haven approach there, but also less data of travel when that's appropriate. About having these dedicated research coordinators to assist approved researchers with the projects, because a lot of the time as well, the bureaucracy gets in the way. People don't necessarily know who to go to, who to speak to, what's the guidance is out there, and what do I need to know and what do I not need to know. So those research coordinators are going to be absolutely key. And it's also about making sure that we have a clear idea collectively together about what the high standards are that are appropriate and what best practices actually are. So in terms of improving governance for all of us, it's about reducing this burden and also the uncertainty of researchers while increasing transparency about what actually goes on, the decision-making processes that actually have to take place. And what we've been doing so far in the course of the governance stream is looking at this question of setting standards. What does it mean to sort of set standards? What sort of standards are important? What would we expect? And what we've come up with is a principles and best practice document. And I'm going to give you just a couple of examples from that, which it sets standards, which we would hope, not just within the SHIP model, but arguably across different sectors, people would be willing to sign up to. And therefore, if we've got a common set of standards, then that this notion of sort of trust in actually what's going to happen and what could happen will flow from that. In terms of responsibilities, as Steve's already indicated, it comes down in law to data controllers, and that's not going to change. The law imposes that responsibility on the data controllers to take to face legal liability if they misuse the data for which they're responsible. What's happened up until now, and not just in Scotland, but around Europe, because the data protection legislation comes from Europe, is we've seen in operation a culture of caution. That this idea that these are my data, I'm responsible for this, I might be liable for this, and therefore I'm not going to share. And part of that is, we believe, and it's borne out by sort of speaking to researchers like yourselves, is part of that is borne out of actually not understanding necessarily what it means to be a data controller, but also what are the flexibilities in and around those responsibilities that you have. So I'm going to say something a little bit about that as well. And again, as Steve said, we've come to realise with SHIP that it's not just about the health sector, it's actually potentially across the country, across so many different sectors, potentially across all sorts of sectors, but what it's going to require is buy-in from all the stakeholders involved. So what we're trying to sort of shape here is a model that people can buy into and feel that they've actually got some sort of ownership of as well. So I would be very interested to have your feedback on whether you think we're moving in the right direction. And ultimately also, if it's about reducing burden, it's about increasing efficiency, what we're trying to do is to provide a uniform and high-quality advice within a single structure. You don't have to go to six different bodies in order to get the permissions to link the data or to get access to the data that you want. And it's also important to highlight that what we're talking about here is what we use as a shorthand, proportionate governance. If coming at these sorts of issues, as I do as a lawyer and somebody who's interested in ethics as well, we've seen a real imposition from the world of, for example, clinical trials, the importance of consent, respect for autonomy, etc., being imposed on the world of data linkage. And they're two different worlds. You know, what is required in terms of actually having direct interventions for research purposes in somebody's body are not the same considerations when you're dealing with data. And we need to therefore have a proportionate response in terms of what we require from researchers when they're dealing with data, as opposed to what we require from researchers if they're dealing with people. So we need to, what we're trying to develop here is a sense of proportionate governance in the context of data linkage, and I will share with you what our current thinking is on that. So as we've seen already from Steve, this is the ship model that's under construction, and I didn't mean to actually to build itself up like that for construction purposes. And Steve has talked about effectively this part here, how you can improve the linkage once the permissions have been sought. In governance terms, what I'm interested in and what I want to talk to you with is this part here. Because as he's indicated, if you're talking about linkage across a number of different sectors, you're dealing with a number of different data controllers, etc., then that could potentially very quickly become incredibly burdensome. So how can we actually reduce that burden, and what might the role of the research coordinator be in this context? And also, what might the role be of training in order to make sure that the system works more efficiently? So that's the question about proportionate governance. What does that actually look like? It seems to me that there are four questions that we need to cover. First of all, what's at stake? What are these principles and instances of best practice that we've identified? Who's involved and who's responsible? As I've indicated, that comes down to the data controllers, first and foremost, and in law, primarily. In terms of proportionality, we need to be clear on what the benefits, burdens, and risks are involved with each application for linkage or for use. And therefore, therefore, what we're talking about is identifying means of making an appropriate risk assessment for each application to use something like SHIP to run it through the model. And at the end of the day, therefore, what we need to do after that risk assessment for a particular application, for this application, we need then to ask is what is an appropriate research pathway for that application? And that's about engaging with the right people and the right principles and avoiding unnecessary regulatory burdens. So in other words, it's not a one-size-fits-all model. We need to be responsive to what's actually being proposed. So just to take each of those in turn. We've drafted up a document, a 10-page document of principles and best practice which we think are relevant to this particular area. In terms of principles, what we mean by that are foundational starting points for deliberation and action. Principles are not rules. They're not things that you absolutely have to do. They're statements from which embody effectively an expectation of what should be done, but nonetheless it can invite further deliberation about what will actually happen in the context of any particular application. And it also involves examples of best practice, which are, as we say here, instances of implementation of principles to a very high standard. And we've in that document, we've covered all of these different areas here, trying to highlight what we think are relevant. And again, as we realise, these areas are not just relevant to the SHIP context, they're also relevant to the context in which you work yourselves. Just to give you some examples of what this looks like in practice, public interest is put forward as the first principle. Stated thus that scientifically sound and ethically robust research is in the interest of protecting the health of the public. That is stated up front. That is expected to be a commitment of institutions that will sign up to the SHIP framework. And what flows from that is that the responsible use of health data, and arguably that we could take health out of that, the responsible use of data should be a stated objective of organisations adhering to this instrument. So that commitment is there up front, and that's often a message that has got lost up until now, the importance of actually promoting linkages and responsible uses of data. But in terms of a best practice that flows from that principle, It's the data controller's responsibility to ensure the development of transparent policies that demonstrate their understanding of best interests and the basis upon which they will use and disclose health data. Often that goes unsaid. Often institutions have not engaged with this commitment to public interest and therefore articulated exactly what their commitment is and what they're willing and not willing to do. So we suggest that an appropriate framework would embody that. Consent in this area comes up all the time. It seems to us that it's appropriate to take as a starting point, because it is reflected in part in law, that personal data should not be used without consent unless it's necessary. But it is possible to make a case that it's necessary to use data without consent in some circumstances for research purposes. But in those circumstances where consent is not either, it's not possible or practicable to obtain consent, then either data should be anonymised, as soon as it's reasonably practicable. But again, as we know, for research purposes, anonymising data isn't necessarily in your research interests. Sometimes you need to be dealing with data that either are identifiable or potentially identifiable, and otherwise it will skew the results of your research. So anonymisation is not always an answer. Or you somehow get some authorisation from an appropriate oversight body or a research committee that should be obtained. So you've got, if you like, a layered approach to dealing with permissions here. And in terms of best practice, all that this section here indicates is that institutions and individuals should really be thinking in advance about potential research uses of data and getting that consent up front. But of course, as we know, with older data sets, that's not necessarily possible. But what we're suggesting is that either the anonymisation or the authorisation route is actually a way of dealing with that absence of consent. We should not fetishise consent, in other words, is what I'm saying here. Consent's really important where it's appropriate, but it's not always appropriate. And it's not always necessarily the best protection either. It's not because somebody's consented to something, it means that their data necessarily protected, quite the opposite. And third example here in terms of cross-sector sharing, we envisage this very centrally within the SHIP model. That obviously where ethical and legal standards are met, data should be made accessible to trusted researchers across disciplines, and that the value of cross-sector sharing should actually be embraced. And of course, along with the benefits and risks that need to be identified, it's also about making sure that there is reciprocity in terms of the privacy standards across sectors is necessary. And what we would hope for this document is actually that it would be, if you like, a template that different sectors, different institutions, different individuals can sign up to, saying, we sign up to this, we follow this, and therefore there's a consensus, if you like, around what the standards are that everybody will be operating to. And similarly, it's about reducing unnecessary duplication of approval procedures or governance mechanisms across these different sectors. An example of that already happening in practice is with respect to CHI. There's a CHI advisory board which advises on uses of the number in particular contexts. And directors of public health, for example, have signed up to effectively the advice of that board speaking for them. If the board has spoken on a particular topic, then they have confidence in that that's the appropriate way to move forward. You don't need to go around all the directors of public health getting their approval. So there are some examples out there of mutual trust working in practice. And in terms of a best practice example here, what we would need is sort of clear specifications covering what the position is on confidentiality, security and privacy, either through protocols or by other means. And what you need to do is to agree up front across sectors the basis upon which any sharing will take place. Second point about good and proportionate governance, who's involved and who's responsible. Here are three questions that come up all the time, which take us a little bit into the law. I'm not going to get into the ins and outs of the law, but these are three really important questions. When do you become and when do you stop being a data controller? When does that legal liability kick in and when does it fall away? Secondly, what flexibilities exist for the assumption of or the agreement of data protection responsibilities, i.e. to what extent can you agree between those who are responsible for the data, who will take what responsibility within any particular usage? And thirdly, this is a question that we've been kicking around within SHIP. Is there a meaningful distinction between data disclosure, i.e. basically I'm handing over the data to you and therefore I am transferring my responsibility as a data controller, and the notion of data sharing where we effectively share the responsibility for the use? Is it possible to do that within law? Just to look very briefly about the legal position, as Steve has indicated, all this talk about data controllers comes from the Data Protection Act, and that confers this responsibility on the individual who is the data controller, and therefore it's absolutely essential and key that we identify who that is. in relation to any personal data that are being processed. At the European level, there's something that exists called the Article 29 Data Protection Working Party. It basically issues advice on data protection issues. And they've said this last year, that somebody is not a data controller unless, in fact, in law, they have the capacity to set the purposes for the processing of the personal data. That's the key term there. If you are actually de facto the individual or the institution that can actually control the purposes for which a data set is used, then you, in law, will be the data controller. Yeah, so it's very much the law follows fact. If you are in control, then you are legally responsible. But this party also indicated that a pluralistic approach is possible whereby a number of data controllers can operate together with shared and differing degrees of responsibility. It's also possible and it's also acceptable. In other words, you can agree among yourselves what's going to happen. So the key messages I would take from that is, first of all, it's essential to be clear who's acting in a data controller respect. So if there's going to be data sharing going on, you know, who has that responsibility according to the fact and law test that we've laid out. It is possible for one or more parties to act in that capacity, and if that happens, if you're acting together, if you're sharing the data and you're not passing on the responsibility, then you will be jointly liable for that, for what happens. But by the same token, it's also possible to agree between parties who will act as a data controller with respect to any given data set. So this idea of passing it on, passing on the responsibility, is also possible in law. And indeed, that's what happens effectively with ISD, isn't it? At some point, when you actually allow the access, you say we're transferring those data, and therefore we're transferring that responsibility. So it can be clarified so long as you know exactly where the parameters sit. So the challenge for us in the SHIP context is really when applications come in, we need to get some sort of sense of what sort of type of application are they and what sort of risks are we dealing with. And we also don't want to be reinventing the wheel here. We need to be developing a mechanism which actually is meaningful across different sectors. And on that point, if you look at what's happening at the moment with the Office for National Statistics, their draft research data access strategy has identified four different categories of uses of data, ranging from what they call Category 0, which is effectively the data are public and open access, through requests which relate to low impact on privacy, medium impact on privacy, i.e. they say it's potentially disclosure, up to high impact on privacy, which is clearly where a lot of concerns will sit with respect to health data. And those risks are assessed relative to probable threats to privacy, likely impacts on privacy, or even, and importantly as well, the reputational risk to the DCs. So what we're trying to do at the moment with SHIP is to come up with something similar that would reflect a categorization model for saying what types of application are we dealing with? Is it cross-sectoral? Is it coming from an international basis, etc.? Is it straightforward, in which case it can go through quite easily? In the specific context of SHIP, here are just some comments on our current thinking. Much of what ISD does at the moment is effectively concerned with data extraction and concerns about what will happen if those data travel, and therefore issues about security, concerns about security. So this safe haven model arguably reduces that, as Steve explained in response to one of the questions, and therefore makes clear the responsibilities individuals have when we're dealing with data extraction. What we can imagine happening with the SHIP model as well, if you've got people who are coming, researchers who are coming back for renewed access to data sets, having better and more streamlined mechanisms for dealing with requests which are effectively just an extension of the original application, and therefore so long as it's within the broad purposes that were originally laid out, you don't necessarily need to go through cumbersome approval mechanisms, that you can reduce that. And it's also about arguably building up a relationship of trust with the researchers and mechanisms to demonstrate that trust and that they can be trusted. It's also arguably about promoting a culture, not of caution, but of sharing with data controllers across any number of sectors, and making or encouraging them to see sharing as a core purpose of their responsibilities, and therefore of facilitating sharing, getting people to sign up, if you like, to this particular model. And the multiple sector linkage notion is obviously part of that. And this picks up on the idea that Steve laid out there of a national pack. Because if it were possible to take the work that we do currently for ISD and for GROS and establish a national pack, then it might be the case that any number of data controllers around the country could come to this national body for a single point of advice where that advice could actually be consistently given. And Steve mentioned a legal basis for that. As a lawyer, I would prefer that to be a legal basis, and I can bore you with the reasons for that if you wish. But it doesn't actually have to be set up by law. We could set that up now today. And we could, as a matter of convention, we could have a national body that served as a single point of advice. It would make it more robust if it had a legal basis, but we don't need to wait for the Scottish Parliament to pass a law in order for us to have such an entity in place. In terms of sensitive linkages, what we need to do, of course, is to sort of link up then effectively the type of application that's being made with what is an appropriate governance mechanism and what might count as additional safeguards. And in principle, arguably, international linkages should be treated the same, but I put a but there because any time you start talking about international linkages, people get uncomfortable. I'd be interested to hear people's views on that. But key to all of this as well is it's not just about what SHIP does and reducing the governance mechanisms that are in place. It's also about making sure that education and training are part of the SHIP model or any other model so that the researchers can actually get up to speed, because apparently what happens on the ground a lot of the time is that the bureaucracy is added to because people don't understand their responsibilities, don't understand what's required, etc. If we can have effective training in place, that can reduce a lot of that regulatory burden. So just to pull that together, on that last point, it would mean that, for example, if a data request comes in and the research coordinator is involved in assessing what type of request it is, what level of impact, what level of application it is, it may well be, for example, in the first instance, that person needs to go for appropriate training and needs to be approved as a researcher within the model. In terms of governance, you see we've got here in the slide this idea of a national pack to which any one of these data controllers could refer for advice on whether or not a particular linkage was actually appropriate. But what we cannot do is change the legal reality that the buck stops with the data controllers. Finally, in terms of mapping the categories of application to suitable governance pathways, what are the possibilities here? How might that actually work? Well, what we're trying to develop at the moment is some sort of system of triage, whereby we can sort of look at, on the basis of what we've done already in the pack that I'm involved in, looking back across types of application and asking whether or not we can build precedents and see whether or not if a similar type of application comes in, it could be dealt with really quite straightforwardly. It would not necessarily have to be referred, for example, up to a national pack to reduce the work of that body, but also to make sure any applications are dealt with in an expeditious fashion. And it's also about recognising the trusted relationships that we might build up with researchers over time. That obviously links into what I've just said about education and the establishment of approved researcher status, which might seem like a burden in the first instance, but arguably in the longer term it will pay dividends. As I think it's clear here, the research coordinator is an informed gatekeeper. They're the person that would be responsible for making sure that all those principles and best practices are kept in the foreground and guiding researchers through the governance mechanisms. But at the end of the day, it's the data controllers who have to take the decision about whether they are or are not willing to share their data. And what we envisage doing here is building a toolkit for data controllers to help them to take the decisions as to whether or not to do that, hopefully buying into this overarching architecture. And as I've already indicated, if we have a National Privacy Advisory Committee, that would be absolutely central in that architecture for giving out advice. Finally, something that we're going to start exploring quite soon is whether or not we should have different sort of categories of license reflecting different categories of application, because it may well be if SHIP burgeons and it does actually have a role across the different sectors, we may get the situation where data travel is envisaged. The safe haven mechanism might not necessarily be an answer in all circumstances. We need to think about what are appropriate sanctions. But the problem, of course, is when you get to the sanction stage, it's already too late. You really need to be building in the protections well before that, because sanctions, it's very much a case of closing the barn door far too late in the process. So what are our next steps? What we're doing at the moment, within the next month, we've asked colleagues within SHIP, and I would ask you as well, to provide us with case studies examples, either real or imagined examples, of what you might want to get from SHIP, the sort of linkage that Steve was talking about. And what we want to do is to run it through this hypothetical model to see how it might actually work in practice, to help us identify the different categories of application that we would want, what would the different governance pathways look like, what would be proportionate governance at the end of the day, because that's really what we're trying to identify here. It's about shaping good governance as a robust and proportionate mechanism. And it's also about engaging a range of stakeholders like yourselves in this process. And we're open, very much open, to refining the model. So I would very much welcome any suggestions that you might have. Thank you.
This recording is copyright of IRIS 2011. It may be reused under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial ShareAlike 2.5 UK Scotland license. Go to www.iris.org.uk for more information.